The world of construction is transforming before our eyes. How we design, plan, quantify, and build is changing day to day. But it's never been so easy to connect, share, and bring people together. Our industry is reshaping. So how do we develop relationships? How do we overcome our fears? How do we generate business? And how do we ultimately become the best version of ourselves?
This is Made to Measure. I'm Mick Donaghy. My guest today is...
On this episode of Made to Measure, we are joined by Kate Hannaford. Kate is a powerhouse within the world of business development, marketing and strategy throughout the construction and design sectors. Currently, Kate is the new business manager of John Holland, a Tier 1 international main contractor and previously head of business strategy for Wattpac. In this episode, Kate sheds light on how to build a network, how to establish relationships, and how to develop and maintain winning business. As well as her role in the construction sector, Kate is also a sponsor for 500 Women in Property, as well as being a coach, a strategist, and a change agent. I honestly felt that Kate was so insightful in this episode, and I'm certain that if you work in the construction or design industries, you'll get much value. I really hope you enjoy it. This is Made to Measure. This is Mick Donaghy, and my guest today is Kate Hannaford. How's it going, Kate?
It's going well, thanks, Mick. I hope you've had a good day today.
Yes, I have indeed. So can I ask you, Kate, to introduce yourself to the audience out there, as I can never really do it justice?
Yes, I am Kate Hannaford. I have a role as in new business for a Tier 1 contractor. I have a background in communications, and I've been within the construction and design industry for maybe 15 years now. And I happened upon this avenue by mistake.
So talk to me about that. So how did you get into construction, Kate?
I worked at SBS and had a background in media for many years. I worked there for 10 years and I then left and I took a contract for a year as a radio and communication specialist for a contract for the health department. And then I actually met somebody at a garden party and who said to me, I need someone like you. And I said, sure. Because I'd made a decision to myself that whatever opportunity came, I would say yes. I would not say no to things. I would say yes and investigate the opportunity. And so when I went there, it was a very large architectural practice, which I realized at the time that they didn't really have any idea what they needed. And I had no idea what they wanted either.
Mm-hmm. How did that unfold?
Well, they engaged me and it was like a baptism of fire for me, in the sense of I really didn't know anything about design or construction, in terms of I didn't know what a master plan was. And one of my first gigs was to ring senior planners at council and ask them about their master planning requirements, which, as you can imagine,
yeah,
it was challenging.
Baptism of fire?
It was, yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a field architect, so... Yeah, I loved art when I was in high school. Came first in the UK actually in my final exams. So I was quite cocky. I thought I would get accepted into every art college and architecture college in the UK and Ireland. And out of five, I only got accepted into one because I didn't put in a portfolio that they wanted to see. So. Mm-hmm. I studied architecture for a year and realized that it's extremely challenging profession. So I have a lot of respect for architects and what they go through. So your role then within the architectural side of things, was it new business and business development, or what type of position was it, Kate?
It was business development, and then it progressed to I was also responsible for managing the publicity and consultants, our public relation consultants. That role kind of expanded. Yeah, I was there for 4 years.
When you started in that particular company and you had no, you know, you didn't have any construction or design experience, what did you do to teach yourself? You know, what sort of skill sets did you have to obtain in order to take the bull by the horns and really go after it? Was it just sort of trial by error, or did you look into anything or get mentors, or how did you make that position a success?
No, I've never had a mentor, and I think mentoring is a great idea. What did I do? I just watched and learned, but I do that with every job, you know. In every job, every position you come to, the first 6 months, you just really have to observe and listen and learn as much as possible from the people around you and make your own observations about how the business works. I think at the time when I joined that business, there's been some particularly talented directors, and they were very good at the front end of the business, so I learned quite a lot quite quickly. Mm-hmm. In the way that they generated their own business, how they networked, and also how they ran their tenders and submissions.
Were you particularly involved in that side of things, the bid and the tenders and submission side, or?
I was involved in everything, but I usually am. In every job, I end up being involved in that, because marketing and communications and business development is all, you know, interconnected. Mm-hmm. And it's all about how you're positioned and perceived in the market. So that begins from your initial conversations to your work winning and conversions to your delivery.
Mm-hmm. So you've obviously had a few different roles in business development over the years then, Kate. So you should be quite familiar with winning work. And I guess that's something that people nowadays and contractors and company and consultancies and architects, they want to win more work.
Yes.
What's the secret?
Understand your client. Mm-hmm. Walk in your client's shoes. I mean, that sounds very trite and people say that, but quite seriously, I think the temptation is often any practitioner who's passionate about what they do will often fall into the trap of focusing on how they're going to either build or design the project as opposed to how they're going to win the project and how they're going to take the client along on a journey. Mm-hmm. So builders often, and because it's really, it's very intense, resource intense, you basically have to figure out how you're going to build the building as you tend to the building. So it's a massive commitment of IP, of passion, of talent. And so it's easy for them to fall into, and across every business has been similar in the sense that, or architects is like, I'm going to design, you know, their design is the best design ever. Does that respond to the client's requirements? Is that their vision or is it your vision? And what are the key concerns of the client? There's a skill in understanding that. I'd say.
Yeah. I know I'm maybe going into this just a little bit, but I'm actually quite interested because I love business development myself. So at the very initial stages of going through that journey, do you sit down with a client and go through a full process of, you know, querying and questioning and finding out exactly what they're looking for? You know, what is it that you do in that respect? And I'm asking more because I'm curious, and people probably know this answer, so I'm sorry if it sounds like a stupid question.
No, not at all. I think in terms of the team, you have to, because like I really like research and analysis, and I have also a theory that you don't go after clients who are in love with somebody else. Like mm-hmm. you don't. It's like dating, right? Business mm-hmm. is like dating. You don't. You go after the ones who have fallen out of love. Mm-hmm. Because you can spend a lot of time, and I've been in other businesses where they've done it, where you just go, oh, I think I can win that. And it's like, why do you think you can win that? Just because you can do it doesn't mean you're going to win it. Mm. Why do they want you? And particularly, why do they want you? And in the last three major projects, they've used the same consultant or the same builder or the same whatever. So you really have to ask yourself the hard question, why you? Like, why? Why do they want you? So they might be desperate and dateless and fallen out of love and had a terrible experience with somebody else. And that's the best opportunity as far as
So don't go after someone who's married, basically.
Exactly. Why would you go after the heartbroken?
That's such a good way of looking at it. So how do you find the heartbroken?
Well, that's not hard, because if you understand the market, then, I mean, the market loves exchange of gossip and intel, and so mm-hmm. you spend a lot of time. And then, obviously, you know a lot of people. You end up knowing a lot of people in the business. there's no not many secrets in many industries if you know the business well. So
people talk a lot. I think that's quite obvious, isn't it? And people like to share rumors and then spread a bit of gossip. That's for sure.
Everybody does that. And also, I think the thing is, everything in this industry, as most industries, is it's relationship driven. So
I'm going to ask another question on that. And I was quite keen on maybe sort of exploring your career, but because you've done a lot of business development, I'm quite interested in that side of things. So forgive me as I hone in on it just a little bit, but once you've found the heartbroken, and once you understand what they're looking for, how do you build a relationship?
Well, it's all about exchange of trust. So it's how do you develop trust between somebody. Mm-hmm. Each and everybody is different. So look, there are some clients who are just going to be motivated by the dollars, right? Mm-hmm. Pure and simple. So they're just commodity players. And then there's others who are really serious about quality, like really serious about quality, or really serious about status. So let's say if they want to get the best, they want to have the most innovative and exciting building designed in Sydney, let's say. Mm-hmm. Well, how do I position them to think, and how do I truly engage in a meaningful conversation with them to really understand what they want as opposed to what I want? I think that's the separation. It's understanding what they want. It's not about you. It's about them, essentially.
Yeah.
And so sometimes they're just not for you, then, or you're not for them. That's, once again, it's like dating. It's like you've really got to be very selective in what you pursue and who you pursue, and understanding that there's an opportunity and understanding that you can offer them what they need. So the best way to blow a client out of the water, obviously, is to, it's like, it's just that old adage of managing expectations. So you don't overpromise and then underdeliver.
I get that being in recruitment.
Yes. And it's poison. It's box office poison to do that to people, because nobody likes having that done to them. So if you're disingenuous in your intent, then that eventually will be exposed, and then that can cost you a lot of money. That can cost you a lot.
What do you find the most challenging part of business development?
I think it's not challenging, but kind of critical in business development, particularly when you work in large organizations or large practices, is garnering the internal stakeholder engagement. So you're aligned from your side, and in understanding and delivering the client's expectations. So I think that's kind of critical.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess since when you started in your career, you know, 15 years ago or whatever the exact date was, have you noticed much change within the industry and how things are done? Or is it, does it always come back down to that managing expectations, building those relationships and succeeding?
The industry is becoming more sophisticated in the way it manages relationships. Mm-hmm. It's maybe putting more resources in and generally becoming more sophisticated in its response to market. Mm-hmm. So I see that happening. I see that there's a lot more focus on getting in on opportunities a lot earlier and developing relationships a lot earlier. And I see large businesses or small businesses across the board trying to develop more meaningful relationships with clients. But it's difficult, because then clients might have one intention, but then they have a whole series of other drivers from their own internal requirements, and then you've got a whole lot of drivers from your own internal requirements. So it's meeting up with those expectations from both sides in order to make something successful, and then looking after that throughout the process.
And so do you get involved? So obviously you're at the front end of this. Are you involved during the whole life cycle of construction as well?
I have been in other roles. I have been a lot more in other roles. In this role, because we're just a larger organization and the project sizes are so large, that is not part of my remit.
Yeah, you probably typically don't need it. Yeah. And I guess if there's someone out there who's, you know, a pre-construction manager, a bid manager, and they want to move into, say, business development or new business, What can they expect?
So you have to be well managed, self-managed, as I'm sure you understand. So you have to set your own pace. You can waste a lot of time doing a lot of stuff that I don't consider as necessary. I don't know. I think there's a temptation of appearing to do and actually achieving outcomes.
Yeah.
People can spin their wheels a lot and then being very strategic in what you think. So you see some people who are very good at process are not particularly well suited to this role. Because this role is not governed by a process, really.
So what type of people are suitable or would be good for that type of position?
Interesting. I don't know. It's usually people who are good communicators, understand the value of relationships, and I think the most successful ones who desire to build trust. I think those are kind of critical. But also those who are able to strategically position themselves and to understand the idea of strategic positioning, I think, is critical. And that's quite difficult, and that's quite complex, and it's something you have to learn.
Yeah. See, in my opinion, business development is there's a bit of art and there's a bit of science involved. So it's like there's a very thin line between both, and I always find it extremely challenging trying to recruit for business development people.
Yes.
Because you know what's on paper isn't always, you know, a true reflection of who they are, and then when you meet them, it isn't always a true reflection of what's on paper. I know that sounds a bit strange, but good business development people know how to sell. So it's always one of those roles I kind of have always struggled with, because it's hard to put facts and figures on.
Yes, because it's the intangible. It's not the tangible, but also I don't think it's really a role about, I think selling kind of short is a shorthand version of what really good development people are able and capable of doing.
Yeah,
I don't think it's like we're not moving out. You know, you're selling a service, right? So, what are you actually selling in terms of professional services, for instance? It's not a commodity. It's actually you're selling people, and you're selling IP, and you're selling a concept of a business, and then you're selling an approach. So it's what you're positioning and asking people to engage with is intangible itself.
Yeah.
So if you want to commodify that and to put it, unitize it, then there's a tension between that. It doesn't really work. It's not like you're selling computers, right?
Yeah.
I
agree.
It's a different mindset.
Yeah.
A different approach.
Well, we're in the business, and I'm in the business of, you're not selling people, but you're obviously brokering the deal between one individual and a client. And one frustration I always have is that our industry is maybe the only industry where someone can, your product as per se, which is the person that you're representing, can change their mind at any time, you know. And that's always one of the most challenging parts of what I do. But I guess that's possibly similar on the construction side, where our client can change their mind at any time, and the paradigm can switch from one side to the other very, very quickly.
Yeah, there's full of unknowns, isn't there? It's full of unknowns.
Yeah, I agree. So in terms of, obviously, individuals who are out there at the moment who might want to look into potentially business development, or would you have any advice on what they should do maybe to prepare themselves for getting into that type of position, Kit?
Well, I guess they've got to ask themselves is, why do they want to do it? Now, it's not just about lunches, like endless lunches. And people say that to me, and I'm quite insulted by that, actually. It's like, sure, you like to go out to lunch. Sure, I can have lunch. Sure, I can, you know, go out for drinks. But it's far more nuanced and more sophisticated than that, than just a simple flashing a credit card around. And because you are the... In terms of marketing and branding, you are the physical representation of a brand. So that's how you have to consider yourself and conduct yourself.
And is it a 9-to-5 role?
It's what you make it, I think. But it depends on really what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
You really just got to be in alignment with what the business expectations are. So if you're in a high churn business and you you could be chasing a lot of things. Whereas, you know, if you're in a highly selective business, then you've got a few accounts, but you have to be quite strategic and careful in the way you manage and negotiate that, or choose to be perceived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so doing perception, I think, as well.
One part of business development, and I'm sorry for talking about this so much, but there's going to be so many people out there that get value from it, and you're shedding so much light on different aspects. But how do you go about building a network? Because obviously, building a strong network of people is so valuable.
Good question. How do you go about building a network? Oh, right. So I have a thing that I don't talk to people I don't like.
How do you do that in your job?
Because really you're in the business of trust. I'm in the business of trust. I'm in the business of making connections. So not everybody's going to be for me, and I'm not going to be for everybody, number one.
Yeah. Right?
And so, like, it's like everything is quite tribal, right? So, so when you might be mapping out and strategically trying to align something, it's like, I'm not going to be the ideal person necessarily to put on to, let's say, to make a connection with a 25-year-old bloke. Now, I work with 25-year-old men and I have good relationships with them, but they're not necessarily going to want to have lunch or have a drink with me if per se that was the requirements in order for me to get to know them off. And, you know, so I think it's like, how do you, like attracts like so much. Like, so you've got to understand who you are, who's going to really like you and dig you, right, and relate to you. And what's your proposition? So people just don't want to know you. It's like, so let's say somebody will say to you, and I've been in other businesses, this business doesn't do it. And they go, oh, such and such, ring such and such. And I go, and what do you want me to say to them? Like, what are you offering them? What am I offering them?
Yeah.
Like, oh, please like me? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous business proposition. So it's like, what can I share with them that's going to add to their business or to their lives and add value to it?
See, that's the part that I think the art of business development is, having that creative thinking. You know, you've got to find that little piece of information or whatever it is, and then you're maybe ringing your client or your potential client to pass that on. As you said, you know, what are you ringing them for?
Yeah. Like, why do they want to hear from you? They're really busy people. But I think also the thing is going to large, you know, going into large rooms and networking with people is my idea of hell. And that's not my style. So I guess it's finding out what your style is and what resonates with people and what you can share. So, like, I really like, I've been invited by other businesses to critique their teams. Like, other consultants have asked me in the past to, would you mind coming in and critiquing our presentation? Or we're pitching for another business. So there's no conflict. I'm just doing them a favor. Mm-hmm. More than happy to do that. I like doing that. In fact, I love doing that stuff. Mm-hmm. Or I've been asked to, when they're doing their strategic planning sessions, they've invited me in to talk and offer my point of view from contractors, like the contracting building perspective, to architectural practices. Mm-hmm. So I love that. So I love that B2B exchange of ideas, information, perception. So I'm giving to them and they're giving to me. And so that's a mutual exchange. That's what I enjoy. That's what I like to do to network. And also, well, obviously, I have my kind of like group, and we exchange information, or individuals, like we exchange information. So it's all about what we're exchanging. It's got to be mutually beneficial and mutually respectful. Mm-hmm.
See, what I like what you've said in just there is that when you don't talk to people that you don't like, that sounds like, it sounds crazy, but you know what? I am the most unpeople person ever. Like, my wife, she'll when I come home at night and I am totally spent, I'm like, I've been speaking to people all day long. I don't want to talk to anybody. Like, I want to talk to my dog, and I'll maybe have a conversation, but that's about it, you know? And I'm quite similar. And there's sometimes maybe a perception that if you're doing something like business development, that you have to be, you have to like everyone and you have to talk to everyone and you have to be a complete extrovert and you have to go to networking events. And there's so much maybe potential pressure that you have to be that person, but it's great that you're saying that you don't.
I think that's a real kind of, a trap for young players. And, you know, I felt that when I first started. I started thinking, oh, my God. And then it was just like, I just went, I'm really bad at doing this. I don't like doing this. It's just not my style. I mean, I've actually gone and rescued other people subsequently. The more, you know, experienced I've become, it's like I've gone up to individuals who stand there lonely in the room and have a chat to them because I actually feel their pain.
Yeah, oh, totally. There's nothing more intimidating than going to like a morning breakfast and, you know, and you're half asleep and you really can't be bothered networking and you're expected to.
It's always good to be nice and polite, but, you know, in terms of making small chit-chat all the time is just, you know, I think I was listening to Seth Godin earlier on today and he was talking about he's in marketing. Do you know him?
He's a genius.
And he was talking about doing emotional work and how we all do emotional work in terms of if you're obviously in the services and creative industries. And he said that, and it kind of resonated with me, it's like you have to own it and acknowledge it, that this is emotional work, a lot of energy, personal energy, and, you know, looking after yourself and your own well-being. He didn't say that, but it made me consider. And you know, connect to the well-being aspect of how, as you've said, you've come home exhausted. And, like, how do you give yourself some relief from that mental load constantly? And, like, so how do you pace yourself? And all of these things that I've really grappled with in terms of self-management. And similar to you, it's like this. There's a roller coaster. Like, you can only sustain your peak and then you've got to have a low time. You've got to have a down time before you can climb the mountain again of motivation. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's a constant. It's not possible to sustain a straight line. Otherwise, people will seriously burn themselves out, I think.
Yeah, it's something I've been in recruitment for nearly 10 years and just this year, I think I've realized more so than ever that the highs are temporary and the lows are temporary. You know, there's a good day will come again and a bad day is going to come again. You know, it's just trying to keep that steadiness. And I guess, have you got any advice on how do you keep that sort of manage that workflow and that work-life balance?
Well, I've decided that when I'm feeling tired, I just do administrative tasks, like really boring work and just pace myself, or I limit the amount, considering pre-COVID, limit the amount of times I go out, limit yourself instead of saying yes to everything, just being selective. And, yeah, I buy more leave. I'm a big believer in taking a lot of leave, so I take a lot of leave. Yeah, otherwise, you know, it's not sustainable. Another friend of mine who's a very successful BD, he's very sports-driven. And he does a lot of sporting activities every morning. He's up and about. But I ran into him a couple of months ago and he said, I just feel exhausted. Like, I'm exhausted from all of this. And he chose to take some time out. So I think it's like, it's not just a female and male thing. I think it's across the board. I think it's really just looking after yourself and being aware of what your limits are. And when you're feeling tired, you most probably are tired. You're not making it up, right?
And do you ever, like, one thing that so sometimes when I'm like really tired, I'll feel guilty for only doing the administrative tasks. Do you ever feel guilty?
Of course I feel guilty, but then it's a negotiation with myself and I go, actually, I'm actually being productive and this is boring. Like, what I'm doing is just like data entry, but it's an important data entry, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, why should that? And I've got to get it done. So why not do it now when I'm feeling like really flat, as opposed to, you know, spending all my energy trying to summon myself for an activity that I'm really not going to put myself.
Yeah, if you're not in that mental space for business development, you're not going to get anything from it, really.
No.
And it's too hard. It's too much of a grind anyway. But and having no energy to do it is even harder.
Yeah. So you've just got to really, I think it's just self-awareness and self-monitoring and looking after yourself and having a positive self-dialogue.
Yeah,
giving yourself a hard time all the time.
Absolutely, and I noticed from your profile on LinkedIn, obviously you're a strategist and coach and change agent as well. You know, do you coach people within the industry, Kit, or do you mentor? Or
I've been involved in a couple of mentoring programs, and I am a mentor to a couple of people. Yeah, they're usually People have just asked me to mentor them, and I do that.
Yeah.
And I've enjoyed doing that. Yeah. So I studied coaching. I did my diploma in coaching because I wanted to understand, because often in business development you move into roles and people go, I want to do this and this and this with my business, and I want to achieve this, this and this. And then you go, okay, I can help you. And then you get there, and then they don't want to change anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what that reminds me of? What do you call that chef? Gordon Ramsay, Kitchen Nightmares.
Yeah. And
they obviously apply to go on the show and then they don't want to change anything.
But yeah. So I studied coaching because I wanted to have better conversations about how to negotiate change, and also how to understand to get around the obstacles instead of going, this is too hard, or taking it personally or whatever. Because basically, change management is all about belief, right? And so it's like, fundamentally, it's you won't get somebody to change their behaviors until you get them to change their belief about something.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
It's as simple as that.
So you can do as much presenting or whatever, but fundamentally, if they have a belief and you're not aware of that belief, or that belief has not been articulated or even articulated to themselves, then it'll be very difficult for them to change their position.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is about self-discovery, and part of it is also about an educational role of encouraging people to engage in new behaviors.
No, for sure. I think that's so prevalent in current times as well, with everything that's going on in the world, and the joblessness and unemployment and people wanting to try new things. And I guess you've got to really look inwards in order to change, you know, for example, I've got a friend, and he's been applying for a lot of jobs in technology, but he has no technology experience at all. You know, and he's been unemployed for 6 months. And I said to him, you've got to look at yourself and look at your experience and look inwards in order for you to get better results with applying for new jobs or whatever it might be. But is it a challenge mentoring people? How is that for you, Kit?
Well, I mean, I like talking, and I like talking about ideas. So that's the kind of my approach is. It's just like just having a chat to people. Like I'm having with somebody this week, and I was in a formal mentoring program with him, and we just meet now because I can learn from him, because he's moved two jobs and he's on the up, and it's really interesting because he's going to be very successful. So I'm always interested to hear what he's up to and what he's doing and what his thoughts are. So I learn as much, I get as much from him as he hopefully gets from me. So I think it's, once again, it's an exchange of ideas, which I always enjoy. But with regards to your friend, I think your friend needs to look at going, well, actually, why do I keep persisting in doing a behavior that does not reinforce me? Like, why? Like, what is the belief behind this action? And what am I trying to achieve in this scenario?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is he trying to achieve?
I don't want to speak for him because I love him dearly. So, but
it's,
I guess,
historical, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I guess for like once getting into tech and it's the thing, and it's, you know, once work for a startup, and you know, it sounds real cool and edgy, but a lot of the time it's not. You know, a lot of the time it's horrible. You know, I guess that's an individual characteristic, but I've worked with mentors before, and I've got like insane amounts of value, like incredible. And I think there's going to be people out there that will want more mentorship in current times.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything that you would recommend that someone looks for in a mentor?
Someone who can listen and actually give you support, not talk at you, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really critical for them to have a deep sense of empathy for you instead of just telling you what to do. Because often we know what we should do, but we create barriers within ourselves. Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I mean, this is what I really like, is like how do we get in our way ourselves? How do we get in our own way to prevent us from achieving what we could achieve?
Have you read the book, The Chimp Paradox?
No.
Can't remember the author's name, but it's all about how you get rid of your chimp. So it's all about the... It's all, neurologically and all of this sort of stuff, but it's really, really interesting, and it's broken down into layman terms for people like me to understand. You know, yeah. you've got your chimp, and it's thinking one thing, and it's usually reacting to the emotional elements of day-to-day life, like road rage or whatever it might be, or, you know, but then there's what your actual brain, what you actually want, how you manage that. You know, it's quite interesting. But I'm fascinated by all the psychological elements of sales and business development and that sort of thing. Do you have a favorite book that you like?
I just picked up the other day when I was up country in a secondhand bookshop, The Happiness Trap, and it's really quite interesting. Mm-hmm. In that it's basically about self-observation, and they start the book off, and it's in the first few pages, so I'm not spoiling the book, but the book is like, just observe yourself saying, let's say I'm having an anxious thought, right? So instead of you going, oh my God, I'm having an anxiety, I'm feeling anxious, they'll go, so just say to yourself, I am having anxious thoughts. So it kind of removes it from your really close to yourself to kind of, it's just a thought, and it's
you're in control of that thought.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a quiet, and it says, before you proceed with the book, observe yourself and observe for the next couple of days what your thoughts are and how you respond to them, and to comfort yourself by saying, I'm just having this, to see whether it actually works. And it's actually, it's a very good exercise. So, but also I've been listening to Seth Godin's podcast, because I always find him incredibly interesting. So
he is really interesting. And I get so much from him, because he's kind of introverted, but he's like exceptionally good at marketing. You know, I've read two or three of his books. I read Tribes, and then I've read one or two other ones. I can't remember, because they're quite short, which is great.
Yeah.
And you can get through them. And they're awesome. I just wanted to say thanks, Kate. This has been awesome. I suppose last question, what are you excited about within the industry?
Well, I think we're facing a major disruption. So it's an interesting, we're in interesting times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's see the way next year falls out. Let's see the way that plays out next year to see what happens. And
from my perspective, this has been awesome. So that it's like how it's connected people.
Yes.
It's been incredible. Like the frustration I've always had all the time is, how do we get candidate A in front of client A?
Right.
Because, you know, candidate A is exceptionally busy. Client A is exceptionally busy. But a 30-minute Zoom call can be done so easy, and it can be a really nice introduction.
Yes.
And you could follow up with coffee or whatever after that. Mm-hmm. I find this just been great. And it's in terms of my business, it's helped us expand into different markets, because clients are just so more welcoming to this type of technology now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. And it's also, I think people are in some ways less stressed, unless they've lost their job, and then that's highly stressful. But for those who are still working and haven't been disrupted in terms of their employment, I think it's actually, people have been able to actually live a life a lot easier than, and obviously we're not in Melbourne, so.
I know, of course. Well, thank you so much, Kate, for doing this today. If there's anyone out there that wants us to reach out and say hello, and is the best way to get connected via LinkedIn, I guess?
Yeah, they can reach out to me via LinkedIn, they're more than welcome to.
Perfect. Okay, well, thank you so much for doing this today, Kate.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you so much for listening to Made to Measure. I really hope you enjoyed the podcast. This is the only podcast in the world that focuses on the niche area of construction costing. Therefore, as an independent podcast, your support is invaluable. Please like, share, screenshot, give a review, or just tell your friends and colleagues about the show. The more people that know about the podcast, the better the guests that we can bring to you, and the better the content you will consume. Thank you for joining me. I'm Mick Donaghy, and this was Made to Measure.